Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
What are you saying? Edie, what are you saying? Trying to record an intro to my podcast.
Swim podcast, man. Swim podcast.
How's it going, friends, swimmers, and first timers, to a new episode of Someone Who Isn't Me? Podcast about music, art, and creativity that's interspersed with mystical chit-chat, esoteric musings, and some straight-up woo-woo bullshit. My name's Daniel, I'm the host of this thing, and on this episode, my guest is Adam Nurgle-Darski, the very smart, well-read, and eloquent frontman of Polish black and death metal band Behemoth and dark alt country duo Me and That Man. You could say that both bands are like opposing faces of the same coin in their like aesthetic and thematic outlook, and I've had the pleasure of doing record sleeve artwork for both projects, so I was excited to sit down with him and have a conversation to talk about the release of the brand new Behemoth album I Loved You At Your Darkest, which is out now on Nuclear Blast. We talk about the album, the band's musical trajectory and its artwork, and a bunch of other stuff in between. This is Adam Nurgle-Darski. Enjoy.
So, where would you like to start?
Where did we leave?
Where did we start last time?
Well, this is the thing. I think that I remember when you came into Radio 1 and we spoke when The Satanist came out.
Yeah, it was ages ago.
It was a long time ago. But we got into some things and some things that I'm personally interested in. Which you clearly are, because it runs throughout as a current throughout the entire album. So we can talk about that, but first of all, we should talk about the sonics and the songs themselves, because it's fantastic.
Thank you.
I think it feels like the natural progression from the last record, and it felt like with that last record you'd opened up like a whole new realm of possibilities with the sonic palette of what Behemoth was, and I feel like you've taken those pathways which were opened up and traveled further down them and then expanded beyond that with this record, and I think it's a triumph. What was the thought behind the songwriting, the process itself?
I'd say the key word to understand what I Loved You To Your Darkest is sonically, and not only, but since you're asking about the sonics and the sounds and the direction, I believe it's liberation and just opening up.
Yeah.
And it feels like that's what you said, that it was a palette of possibilities, and it feels like The Satanist would be a key... It felt like, you know, someone was just holding a keys and like handing them to us, and that was The Satanist. And I Loved You At Your Darkest is like, okay, we have the keys, so it's only up to us which doors we wanna open and enter eventually. You know what I mean? Because the possibilities were vast.
Yeah.
So after The Satanist, we could probably do anything we wanted. We could just go back, we could stay around the same area, we could just expand, you know, other patterns and channels sonically. So we, of course, you know, I decide always to move on, or not really move on, just
move further.
Just move further by taking curves, let's put it that way, okay?
Yeah.
So it's not really about just how high we can jump, because that's exactly how we can jump, this much, see? Mm. And there was already the stage where we were with the Satanist, and I clearly said that straight up back then. This is not the fastest, this is the heaviest record, you know?
Mm.
That was very honest album. And so we select you to darkest. But it's definitely more adventurous for the fact that we just, some of the currents, we just took it further.
Yeah.
So my idea, like another very general idea was, okay, if Satanist was a bit like, it was driven into towards that rock direction,
hmm.
I really wanted to go even further, you know?
Yeah.
And not be afraid of using literally two chords to build a song, like Barzabel. I just did this playthrough on YouTube, and it's literally, I just realized it's just two chords, you know? I mean, it's the verse, chorus, that's it. And it brings me back to, you know, what I love myself about rock music, you know?
Yeah.
What's the rock most classic songs, you know? It's, you know, if I
back
ask
in you, Black.
Back in Black. Paranoid, Iron Man,
yeah.
Highway Star, fucking Smoke Underwater, and so on, so on. You can go on forever, you know, yeah. But it's all about the simplicity. So why I said liberation, because this music would kind of like open us up, you know, and just brought us to this spot that we're like, okay, if it's only two songs and if it's so structured so like in such a simple way, as long as it's honest and it's us, we just go for it. You know what I mean? We don't need to tease anyone. We don't need to explain ourselves anymore, and we don't need to race with anyone. It's all about the song. We are serving the higher good, which is the vision and the song.
Yeah, I think it takes a lot of maturity, and a band has to go through a certain period in its career to reach that point to realize that, especially a band like yours. Because, you know, when we were all younger, we were just obsessed with, or as I got into heavy rock and then into metal and hardcore, I didn't care about certain bands because they weren't the fastest, they weren't the heaviest, they didn't have the most extreme elements to them. But there comes a point in your life where you suddenly realize that you can get a message across in the most direct way, and it can be equally as heavy.
Yeah,
and crushing and powerful.
Yeah, I've had that. I've always had that, you know. I mean, I honestly have serious problems with most of today's extreme metal bands. The problem is that they're just overdoing. You don't really, I mean, well, if you want, you can play billion notes, you know, within a song. But I don't care, you know. It's going to come through this ear and come out through that ear, and nothing's going to remain, because it's, I mean,
how would 19-year-old version of you have felt though with that statement?
Well if you listen to 19-year-old Nurgle Behemoth, it was still about songs. It's always been about songs. Why? Because I grew up on extreme metal that was all about songs. So when I was wearing a Medieval Prophecy shirt today by Samael, it was songs. Even Blasphemy, that was the most extreme band in the early 90s when I would start Behemoth. There were songs. It was all about verse, chorus, lead, chorus, end of the song. The ancient rock and roll formula created by, I guess, the Beatles, then just took over by Led Zeppelin, AC/DC, and brought into the extreme metal genre. But some of these bands, you know, these days, I mean, I'm not talking about tastes, you know. People may dig it, you know. I just don't dig it at all. I'm like, no, it's gotta have the rock and roll structure to it, you know. And by rock and roll, I don't mean, that's what I say, like the new album is very rock and roll structured, very rock and roll based. It doesn't mean it's, you know, happy music about, you know, about, I don't know, some, we're not talking shallow stuff, and
definitely not.
It's very deep. It's multi-layered. Like even if you have an, sometimes you just, we just, you know, play one note and we just let it sustain. It's still, there's a depth there to it. So, yeah, I think that we really, we've also still like in the process of learning that less is more. And there's definitely more dynamics on this new record. There's more valleys on the on this album, you know.
Yeah.
There's like, it's still pretty fucking intense, but it and very dynamic. But only by the fact that there's like pauses and breaks and slowdowns that we've never had before.
But then that makes those moments where you'll go into a blast, for example, there's even more extreme.
It can be fast, you know, without being very slow. There's no noise without... How would you know that something's noisy if you never heard a silence?
Yeah, yeah.
It's simple as that.
Yeah.
I think this band, not only sonically, but also philosophically, it's always been about, you know, that never-ending... clash of opposites and you know, quoting classic again, ceremony of the opposites, dancing, you know, of opposite poles,
yeah,
and sacrum profanum and so on and so on. Just the older I am, the more experience I have, the more I realize that it's all about that, the duality, the dichotomy of life has always been somehow imprinted in my life's landscape, and it's always been reflected in my music.
Do you think doing the Me and That Man record?
Oh yeah,
that's made a huge difference.
Oh yeah, totally.
I think so. But then I'm seeing that from my perspective.
Mm-hmm.
You agree?
Absolutely. Yeah, totally. I think there's more acoustics on this new album, and I guess that I also brought it from Me and That Man.
Yeah.
Subconsciously, it wasn't like okay. But it just, I opened up, you know. When I remember when we did O Father, Satan, Son, there's this male squire in the very background, on a background track. And I asked my friend to sing it 4 years ago, 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't even try. And these days I'll be in the studio and I'm like, okay, we got that song, Barzabel, you know, and I'm hearing this chanting choir, very repetitive choir, and I need to sing it.
Yeah.
So let's fuck around with the tracks, and I'm gonna, since I'm like musical analphabet, so I don't know. I'll just say, okay, now let me go up and then go down, and let's try some intervals and see if they work together, you know. But I have no knowledge, like academic knowledge on that, and I have no vocabulary in that. So let me just sing, you know.
It's intuitive, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very, very, very much so. And I did that, and since, you know, I mean, we are recording this now on tape, and let me ask you a question. When you hear your voice,
yeah,
how do you like your own voice?
Of course, it's totally different.
Ah, yeah, yeah. Because you cannot hear your voice because you hear it from inside.
Yeah.
And you never hear it from outside. That's why most people are very critical to their own voice. They're like, oh, it's not me, I hate it, you know?
Hmm.
You'd be reading interview with Zach Wall, and he'd say, like, straight up, I hate my voice.
Yeah.
While I think he's pretty awesome vocalist. Not technically, but he's got this something.
Yeah.
And you can say probably the same about everyone. Ozzy, Iggy Pop, everyone. Like, they stand out, right?
Nick Cave,
exactly. So I'm exactly the same. I listen to my own voice and I'm like, I'm not really a fan. It's okay.
This is what I have to work with, though.
Yeah. But screams, same story.
Yeah.
I'm very particular about my screaming. So it's got to be a very, I need to hit the certain notes to and the certain tone,
yeah,
of my, of that scratch.
Yeah, the guttural.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. To hear, oh, this is good. This is what I like. This is me I like, and this is me I don't like.
Yeah.
So we need to repeat that, okay? So even with the screams that is distorted, like that is your natural voice, but it's distorted, so it's no longer natural because it's transformed.
Hmm.
It's still you, and I still very critical to that. So imagine how critical I am to my clean vocals.
Yeah.
I'll be like going back and forth in to the studio, you know, with me and that man, because I'd be like, there'd be like two or three words that I'm like, oh, shit, no, I don't like that. It needs to be sang differently. So it was a lot of work on that record, but all in, like, you know, if I go back to it now, I'd be like, it's okay. You know, I'm pretty happy with it, you know. Next one I'll do better. But now it's cool. It's okay. So with this one, first time with Behemoth, you know, just singing Come Unto Me, Barzabel, I'd be like, wow, it's cool. Yeah. I like it. Let's more tracks. Go on. And I was really into that, into doing that. And I was like, it felt very, it was pretty enlightening doing that. I'm like, shit, I can do it.
Yeah.
It's not bad, you know. I think, and then like the first thing, you know, the same night, there was a party at my place. Inferno was there. I just take him to a bedroom. We sat together on the sofa.
Yeah.
I put headphones on his ear. Listen to this. Boom. He was like, oh shit, this is awesome. So like they were like the first critics, okay?
Yeah.
Because I liked it myself, you know. But you know, it's very subjective, you know. You don't know if it's. You can't say if it's objectively, you know, I think it's good, but I want this to be fucking amazing, you know. Yeah. I always strive for the best. And they loved it, and I'm like, okay, I think I give it a green light.
Was that one of the first ones then where you felt like you'd done that on this record?
No. There was some like background choirs, like quasi choirs in several songs.
Yeah.
That are not... I like that, you know, because you can't really say, is this an orchestral driven record? No. Is it a clean singing record? No.
But there are elements of to expand the palette.
It's all the flavors. It's all about the spices, you know, how you spice up your soup that you're cooking, you know, and that's exactly how I see that. It's more spiced up. It's more sophisticated because of all these elements. Some people don't like it, you know. I mean, I'm not here to satisfy everyone, you know. I mean, a good friend of mine, he thinks it's a massive record, it's an epic record, but he was just straight up with me. I wish one day you're gonna go back and do this like very raw, aggressive, vulgar black metal album. I'm like, yeah, maybe. I don't know, but this is it.
I'm going this way right now.
But now this is it, you know.
Yeah.
This is me, and I'm really fired up, you know, because there's stuff that we just play, and it feels good to be playing. Like Crucifixion was not enough. Like bam, bam, boom, bam, bam, boom. It's like just it ask, you know, 30-year-old Nurgle to, you know, play that kind of beat. You know, and he would just kill you with laughter.
Yeah,
he'd be like, fuck. Oh. I can do better. You know, we can play more notes. I can shred and I can do this. And
yeah.
Well, yeah, that's what I was. That's why The Apostasy was recorded. Probably our, like the pinnacle of that technical stuff. It was cool for that time. Not my favorite record, but it's me.
Yeah.
So like,
well, that's what any piece of art should be. It should be a representation of that artist. At that point in time.
Yeah, that's how I see that. So there's no regrets, absolutely, you know. And but do I want to play, I mean, with people like, I don't know, like there's this wave of bands just cashing on their like back catalog and the sentiment and just doing like some old records in its entirety and like doing Apostasy. Nah. Doing Demigod, maybe, but nah. I'm excited about the new stuff.
Yeah,
that's why we did the Satanist tour. You know, that was pretty bold of us, you know, doing that. 10th record, 25 years into the career, and we are releasing a record that is already the best-selling Behemoth album, the most enthusiastically received record. Period. I mean, everyone.
Yeah.
Was really into that, and then we just do the whole tour when we played the new record from start to finish in the middle of the cycle. That was very much against the current. That was very just somehow surreal, you know, but I just came up with that idea. Let's risk, you know, let's do it. And people loved it. There was no awkward moment, you know, when we would do that, you know, because,
yeah,
like, I don't know if you're a Maiden fan. I'm a Maiden fan, you know, but I would always, like, skip the first tour they do because they just play, like, 70 minutes of the new album, which, like, the last one was really good record. But I'd rather see their recent tour when they go back, you know, and they do the crossover. And that's what I mean, too.
Yeah.
So some bands can do it, some not, you know.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's interesting you saying about how you're just striving to reach that point where there's a balance between the polarities with what you do. Because I think, I mean, this record is the epitome of that, even with the way it runs, with starting with Solvay, where you're breaking everything apart and you're picking through everything that you've done and you're heading into new territory. And then through the course of the record, when you hit Coagula by the end, it has brought it back together. It's an alchemical process and a balancing.
Yeah, that's exactly how I see that. It's an alchemic formula.
Yeah,
that is brought to the. There's just processing this very element, you know, within the metal genre or black metal genre, whatever you call it. But it's awesome, and I think it's exactly this record is. I mean, that's exactly how you said. You know, we just pick up, we start with something that sounds very raw and very primordial, so to say.
Yeah.
And then we just kind of expanding that. You know, we've got Equals Dog. You know, it's just okay. It's more, and there's more elements, and then there is Ecclesia Diabolica, Catholica. And it's like, and it starts to go up and down, and then Barzabel, which is again something new, and then if Crucifixion wasn't, and it's like going back and forth, you know. That's one of my favorite artists these days, you know. Not always, I'm not saying I love all the songs or albums he puts out, you know, like Jack White, okay?
Hmm.
New record, I respect the record, but it's not my record, you know. I mean, I love the previous one. But I totally respect that guy for being non-compromising, completely free artist. And that's what he does.
Yeah.
And what he does is he's taking this ancient sound and he throws it into the future. So you can never say of Jack White that he's retro.
Yeah.
Can you? No. He's a modern artist that is attracting kids. You know what I mean? So he's kind of seriously like, deeply redefining the rock sound, you know, and it's not Greta Van Fleet, you know, that it's not Led Zeppelin wannabe. Cool, well done, but it's pretty much Led Zeppelin rip off. Amazingly done, respect.
However,
Jack White is a new quality. Same goes for Lenny Kravitz. Same story, you know, all the organic, you know, ancient sounds, you know. And like all the beats, even whatever he does, rock, disco, or pop, it sounds like really well balanced. You know, you can feel it's, oh shit, this guy really understands, you know, like all the you know, origins of the genres, but he throws it into the future and he
makes it vibrant.
Absolutely,
yeah.
And he creates something new, something modern. That's exactly what I'm trying to do with Behemoth. I realize, you know, that. We're still part of that current, of that wave that brought us here, you know, that started in the early 90s. And it's very much present on the record. But it's this and more, this and beyond.
Yeah.
And that's how I'd like to see, and that's, I would love people to perceive Behemoth, that we are not just a black metal band.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. I think with this record and the record before, you've already proven that you're transcending that, because I think anyone that sets themselves parameters which pens them in, that's great. You can make the greatest record within that box.
Yeah.
But you're still within a tiny box.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I'm thinking, I'm having this problem with today's pop culture that I'm processing a lot of, you know, goods that are out there, you know, in the offer. Hmm. I mean, I'm reading a lot, and I'm watching, I'm traveling, and I'm digesting all of that, you know. And I'm having serious problem with being selective, you know. But it's very difficult to be selective, you know, when there's so many good stuff coming out there. I think the offer has is tremendous. The offer is overwhelming, and it's very easy to get lost. And I think I find myself lost. Every now and then I'm like, oh, shit. So if you ask me, oh, what's the best book you've read lately? Well, I've read like 10 that are amazing.
Hmm.
And then ad hoc, I'm not even able to name one.
Yeah.
Same goes with albums. That's the worst question ever.
Yeah.
Any good music lately? Yeah, plenty of good music. Any names? And like, then I need to sit and think, you know, because I listen to so much stuff. I watch so much.
Imagine how it is for me.
It's crazy. So I think like art, it's even more challenging these days for an artist to, we really must outdo ourselves in order to make the record remain. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Let's say early 90s or like 80s. I was a kid or I was a teenager. When I would just get into the record, this record never stopped vibrating in my system. It's been there ever since, and it's inbred. It's here in me. And I'm afraid that today's kids don't have that. They just digest it and then they fucking defecate it. They just spit it out, you know? I don't know why. Probably it was like a less, I don't know, but...
But don't you think pop culture's always been like that? Don't you think the nature of pop culture has always been...
Yeah, I'm not talking pop culture. I'm talking... let me put it that way. Where is today's Demistoris Dom Satanas? Where is today's Transylvanian Hunger? Where is today's Highway to Hell? Where is today's Master of Puppets? Where are these albums? But these are the milestones of... generally speaking, heavy metal, black metal, or thrash metal. These days, it feels like it's all, there's hardly anything is that unique. There's unique stuff there, you know? But how many of these records, or these plays, theater plays, or these movies, or these TV series, or these books, how many of them stand out and they'll stay in my heart? And when we meet, I'm 41 now, let's say we meet in 10 years we do the same maybe and Behemoth is releasing a 14th record and I'm like, yeah, remember that record that year, you know, it's still here and I still go back to that, you know. I'm having that problem.
But then a part of that is due to when you're a teenager in particular, you're actually forming physically, neurologically, so those things that resonate with you that are helping you find your personality that really sing to you, those moments are going to stay with you because they're like LaVey spoke about, like the erotic crystallization period where something would happen in somebody's childhood and that would be their kink or their fetish or their sexual peccadillo for life because of something happened at a certain point in their formation.
Okay, right,
so maybe music is that way, so maybe it's hard for us to see those things. I know what you're saying. Okay, I 100% agree. But maybe if we're playing devil's advocate, which is always a good position to play, maybe we find it hard to see those points because we have gone beyond that point. Mm. You think? I know what you're saying, though, because
yes, but
where's Master of Puppets?
Yeah, but what you about... Know? Okay, but then I'm talking not only my own perspective. I'm talking about just taking a like 15-year-old kid. And try to see the scene through his eyes.
I have a son that is a little older than that now, and I know that he's found artists that resonated with him so much.
Like whom?
Lil Peep, for example.
Who?
An artist called Lil Peep. He's like he got put in with hip hop, but it isn't really hip hop. It's sort of beyond that a little bit. It's a lot more. It's kind of come from a more kind of, I don't know, emo punk background, maybe. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so he passed away last year, and I saw how much that hit my son, because that was one of the few artists that he discovered on his own, where, and the guy was close to his age,
So the songs that he was singing and the things he was singing about resonated with him. And then when he passed away, it really hit him hard. So I don't know, but I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
I think there are some, but yeah.
It's like same question. Where are today's, or like, okay, it's the final round for all the headliners, like the big headliners, you know,
yeah,
from Metallica, from Maiden, like Judas Priest, you know, they've all released at least like good records, maybe really, really good, amazing records. And they're doing like amazingly, you know, like sales wise and tickets and tours. But hey, I mean, this is the last round, you know.
Yeah.
We are confront, like Slayer is, you know, saying farewell.
Yeah.
And I've said that before, you know, people ask me that because we've been part of the tour and like, how does it feel? I'm like, I honestly, being a fan, you know, being raised on listening to Slayer, it's the band that basically like open up like this whole, like the gates of extreme metal genre, so to say, for not only for myself, but for plenty of people.
Yeah, me too.
I'd be like, I cannot imagine a world without Slayer. I'm like,
yeah.
I'm like, yeah, yeah. A world without Trump. Yeah, I absolutely see that. You know, I see that coming. You know.
Yeah.
But the world without Slayer, no, not really. How I'm, and I'm stuck, and I'm like blocked, and I'm like, I don't know what to say.
But I remember, yeah, I know what you're saying. I remember getting Hella Waits and staring at the artwork and just being like, is this? It's horrifying, and it starts with the reverse, like the backwards masking, and you're just like, that, like that was as a kid, that scared me and made me want to know more. But then who's to say that this record of yours isn't going to be that record for those people that are finding
stuff?
Well,
of course, you know, I mean, I can.
I know you're not going to want to put yourself in that position.
No.
But.
But what I'm doing here now with this album, in general, I'm outdoing myself.
Yeah.
So I was having like a really high hopes for the new D-Side record for some reason. I don't know why. Because one of my favorite bands back in the days, for many years, you know, there was nothing really exciting coming from that camp. But I saw the cover art, which was amazing. I'm like, holy fuck, I wish it's gonna be something. But I know it's very naive of me thinking that way. The record is okay. And then I'm reading an interview with Glenn, and I know how's Glenn, and I shouldn't be surprised, you know, but literally what he's saying is, hey, I'm exactly what Taxi Driver is, you know. I'm doing my work, you know. Don't ask me about, you know, my emotions and feelings. This is my another album. That's it, you know, period, you know, fuck off. And I'm like, okay. But it's exactly an opposite of what I want to be with my music, with my art, with my relation with the world and you know. No, that's... No. I mean, you...
Then that's what separates great art from lesser art, isn't it? It's the time and the thematics and the painstaking picking through, making everything perfect and finding a true voice.
Mm-hmm.
That's why great art stands above,
mm-hmm,
I think. And if you are just like, this is how I pay my mortgage, it's the same as driving an Uber, but I make music, then fine. I can't...
It's cool. It's okay.
I cannot fault anyone. I can't begrudge anyone earning a living.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I respect that, but on the other hand...
That's not what I want.
Yeah. That's not what I want. And somehow there's bands that I used to look up to.
Yeah.
And I wish they just see things similar to, you know... That'd be more... Let's use it that term, spiritual, you know. But it's not spiritual. But that's exactly what I'm hoping I am and what our music is. Much as we are irreligious or anti-religious, it doesn't take away any of the spirituality of the band. That is very spiritual.
I agree.
And it's... I hope that people can feel some of the metal language that we're trying to that we're using to communicate with the universe, okay? That some of the metaphysics, so to say, you know, because to me art is metaphysical. It's something indescribable.
Magic.
It's magic. It's alchemy. It's a magic alchemy. Some of these terms, you know, they just sound so cliche, but I don't know a better ones to describe what's happening.
Yeah, but then that's because people don't read about magic. Somebody's perception of magic might just be Penn and Teller, sleight of hand, card trick, which is great.
Yeah, yeah. And when people ask me, when I get the question asked, you know, because they expect me saying that I take part in some rituals, I'm like, yeah, plenty of rituals. So tell me about them. You'll be surprised, you know.
Yeah.
My rituals, like my everyday rituals, are magical. What do you mean? Like anything. Name it, you know. I mean, like sunrise is magic.
Going to the gym. Playing a show.
Yeah, there's rituals behind it. It's how you approach it.
Intent. And how,
yeah, exactly. And how you process it, you know, and how you feel about it, you know, and not just check, and then you die. No, I'm
cooking.
Yeah,
which sounds funny. That's how I.
Yeah, absolutely. Cooking. That's one of my metaphors, you know. When I talk about music, it's like, hey, imagine we have a bowl and we're making a soup, okay?
Yeah.
And. So, because they ask me, okay, so how you make music together, you know? I'm like, imagine there's three or four guys around the table, round table, and we have a ball, and okay, I'm the person that goes out, take a bow, and I hunt.
Yeah.
And I bring the, you know, chunk of meat to the table, it's raw. And then we decide what we're gonna do with that, you know? It's Inferno, there it's Ryan, it's Seth, it's me, and we talk, we discuss, we argue but I bring the raw meat to the table.
Yeah.
But how we finish it, if we're gonna make it, it's gonna end up in this bowl and we're gonna make a soup of it, or maybe we're gonna make a steak of it, and then we're gonna discuss if it's gonna be well done or medium or raw. That's another question. So that's exactly how I see the process of the whole contribution and collective that we are. That's exactly how it is, you know. So, and that's again, it's magical, you know.
Yeah, very much so. So while we're talking about that, something that I remember. So the first time we ever met, you won't remember, but it was at the first time I got to speak to you was at when you played with the Big Four, that show in Poland.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh wow.
And I was there, and I think you were getting ready to go on stage.
Mm.
And the whole time I desperately wanted to speak to you about Austin Osman Spare.
Ah, okay.
But because this is something that's been within your work for so long, is that what I was trying to allude to earlier when I was talking about currents was the fact that some bands that play extreme music will reference things or take inspiration from things, and it's very surface level. And that's great, fine. I love horror films, perfect. Mm. But the thing that I'd always wanted to ask you about, which was obviously clearly the wrong time to ask you because you were getting ready to go on stage, but it was my only opportunity, was that always throughout your work, you've referenced it in album titles like Saskia Coltus and Thelemus. And it's like you have a clear understanding and appreciation of magic, and I mean that from a Thelemic sense, from a Crowleyan perspective, and I see, you know, we spoke about it when you did The Satanist, and I said to you about the monologue at the end of O Father, O Satan, O Son, being from Liber Samek. And I find this fascinating because this is why I think one of the reasons it resonates with me is because I'm interested in those things very much so. And it's authentic, right? And then as soon as I heard Bartzabel, I was like, you know, this is a, you know, you're saying about rituals in everyday life. This is actually, this is an evocation. It's a ritual from the equinox, right?
Yes. And this is the only lyrics that I didn't write myself for the record.
Yeah.
And it's a very funny story. I mean, it's kind of funny because Barzabel was not even meant to be on the record, because the thing that we created musically wasn't even a song. It was something weird.
Yeah.
And I had this piece of music that was just the beginning. Then the these accents that became chorus later on, then the verse, and then the lead. It's not really a song. It's some weird formation. Some, I don't know. But like, okay, let's give it a chance, you know. And the guys were like, it's weird, you know. Like, what are we gonna do with that, you know? I'm gonna work with that. Just give it a chance, you know. I'm gonna give it a chance.
Yeah.
So we came to the studio, we recorded those parts, and then I started fucking around with the sections, you know, just started like putting it together. So it ended up having the form of a song, you know. But then I wrote all the lyrics for the record, you know, but this one, because I didn't really believe it's gonna end up being on the record. So I'm like, yeah, whatever. And then I told Christopher Ozarevich, hey, do you have anything there? Because I'm missing. I got this thing that I think it can really grow into something important, but I need lyrics. And then he sent like some parts. I wasn't really happy with his own stuff this time around. But he sent this poem, the prayer or invocation by Crowley. He did some tweaks there, and when I saw it, so I had the music here.
Yeah.
And then, it's magic to me. There's the music here, and then I see this "Come unto me, Barzabel" verse that is a repetitive, and it just comes back every second line, and it just clicked right away to me, like, oh shit. And I heard it in my head, and I just heard it in my body. I was like, oh shit, it's there, I got it. And it was almost like a eureka kind of enlightenment, you know, I got it. And but then the second thought was like, shit, I need to sing it, you know, it must be sang, you know, because I definitely don't wanna scream over the whole song, because it's gonna miss something, you know, so it must be sang, you know. That's how I started approaching that verse, you know, with singing and stuff, you know. And to me it was like, it's cool, and it's like same story of like Chant for Eschaton. It wasn't meant to be on the record. It was a song that I just brought to the, I was very much into Zone by Nephilim back then, and we made this, let's say, classic sounding behemoth for the Satanica. And then I brought these two riffs, literally like this, and these two sections. And the guys were like, Infernal and Less, they were like looking at me and like, what's this, what are you trying to say?
Yeah,
like, please play this that way, please play it that way. If it sucks in the studio, I promise I'm not gonna put it on the record. Okay so we played it only once before entering the studio, because they didn't feel it. Okay, but then what happened to the song? It's like, that's the most exciting thing for me ever, is just to, you do something, you approach something, but there's no guarantee, and you never know what's gonna happen to the song. And same story with Ora Pro Nobis Lucifer. It took me like, I don't know, it wasn't a long process to put the song together in my head. Then we went to the rehearsal room, and we made the song in 45 minutes, everything, from start to finish. And it felt good. It has had a good groove.
But did you feel like it was moving that way itself?
Yeah. It just wrote itself, basically. But I got this mechanism here that would question everything that just goes too easy and too fast.
Yeah.
Like, no. It can't be good if it takes 45 minutes. Wrong, because sometimes it's all about that momentum, you know. It's the momentum, you gotta grab it. It almost feels like the artist is you are this radar,
yeah,
Radar. Yeah, radar, and it's you got to stay alert, and there's these signals there, and you got to stay alert, and if you're alert and if you're awakened, you can just grab it, and if you grab it, oh, you got it.
It's like automatic drawing.
Yeah, yeah, it's like automatic drawing, exactly.
Yeah.
Don't think, just do it.
Yeah.
Don't overthink. Don't all overanalyze. That's another story that you can feel that you can feel on that record. It's like a lot of stuff there. I would just sit on my sofa with a Gretsch guitar because I composed all the basic riffs. I created them on Gretsch guitars, which is extremely non-metal guitar. There's hardly any metal artist. Chuck Berry used to play it, and AC/DC, and Johnny Cash, and Billy Duffy, and that kind of people, rock. And softer genres, you know. It's not metal. You can't shred. You can't even do fast picking because it doesn't feel right, you know.
Yeah.
So I would just play chords, big open chords that would just breathe, you know. And I would just grab guitar and play something that would just feel like a, in Poland we say fire music, you know, when you...
Yep.
Is the
campfire, campfire
music, you know, like boom. And it just felt right, but it's... Is this Behemoth? I don't know. We'll see. So I would just collect everything, record it, and then I would just bring those ideas into the rehearsal room.
This is the hunting that you were talking about.
Exactly. And then I would just grab my heavy metal guitar.
Yeah.
You know, distort with high gain, and then see, and sometimes like, you know what? It's interesting. I would need to like...
Transpose.
To that guitar. And sometimes it would work, and sometimes... No. That's not what I wanted to say. And then we just drop it. It's not the same. But that's interesting. You know, like when I was making The Satanist, I would just compose all the record on Telecaster.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was Telecaster, which again is not a non-metal guitar. And then I was very disappointed when I would play it in the rehearsal room, not on Telecaster, on the studio. I was like, I wish it'd be the other guitar, you know, but then... It would just be too much of a compromise because the other guitar just sounds soft. It has a very loose tuning, you know, because I would just use a very thin strings.
Yeah.
It felt very bluesy, you know, like here. But then when you play live, you know, it's you can't afford just going out of tune, and just there's this weird compromise, you know, you got to do. So I don't know. I really like how Tribulation does it, you know. I mean, like one of these guys, you know, is actually using Gretsch, you know. But then again, they're not just a typical extreme metal band. They're something else, which maybe, some of the stuff, honestly, I think some of the stuff is I mean, touring with Tribulation, like, I would just look at those guys and, like, I think I want to do something like that on the next album.
Yeah.
And I think some of that... Inspiration is not literal. You can't really like make a direct lines that it's you
but
can hear.
It's through you.
Yeah, it's subconscious. It's like it's something resonates, and then you just spit it out. But it's, you always spit it out if you're an artist. You spit it out in a different form.
Yeah, of course.
But
do you find yourself that like I would do things that I'd be like, oh, this is way too much. Like where I've first taken my inspiration from or something that I've heard something and seen someone do something, and I'll paint in a certain way or write some music in a certain way, and I'll feel like, oh, it's too much like where I feel the inspirations come from, and then I'll play it to somebody else and they'll be like, it doesn't sound like that at all.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like that because it's come through
The filter.
Yeah,
I call it the filters. It's like I've said that several times, you know, but that's exactly how I hear music. It's like Nicky's gonna get a guitar now. You get a guitar, I get a guitar, and I ask you, okay, I'll play like E minor, and vroom, 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 and you're gonna hear like three different chords.
Yeah.
Not the same chord.
Mm-hmm.
Even if I ask everyone to play the same chord, it's gonna be different.
Yep.
At least I hear it differently, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Because you're a different person, you're gonna hit it with a different strength, and it's just gonna come out differently. I don't know how to explain that.
No, that's exactly. Yeah,
that's agree. That's what it is. Or, like I say, okay, say I don't know, say grass, and everyone just will say the same word, you know. But the word is gonna sound different, with you know, considering the accent, Male, female, age, you know what I mean? So in that sense, you know, there are 7 billion people living on the planet, so you can hear like 7 billion guitar chords or different ways of, you know, saying grass, for instance. I don't know if it makes sense, but it does to me. You know?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The album artwork.
I had a title and I approached Dennis again because I was so happy with what he did for The Satanist.
Yeah.
But this time I had this idea of having Dennis painting 2 equally rightful covers. Maybe one for CD and the other one for LP, or I don't know what, but I had this idea, okay? So we briefly like discuss, the topics, and but with Dennis is always like, you know, he always changes everything, and then, you know, he goes back to that idea, and then he throws it away and does something. No, I'm working on something even more spectacular, and since he's an amazing artist, and I trust him, and I must trust him, I'd be like, okay, I trust that it's gonna be amazing. So to get sketches, and sketches were great. I'm like, oh, cool, that's going to be amazing. Yeah, I'm very excited. So when we were receiving it, give me one, like 3 more weeks. Okay, we're waiting. After 3 more weeks, no, sorry. I mean, it's of course, you know, it's art, you know, it happens when it happens, you know, so we got to, you know, postpone it. And we're waiting and waiting. And in the meantime, I come across Nicola Samori, when surfing on internet.
One of my favorite artists.
I wasn't aware of him until that very moment. And then when I saw it, I felt it.
Yeah.
I mean, like, holy fuck. So that's exactly the situation I'm having. Because we have already paid for the Dennis work, so it's coming regardless.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, every day I'm checking Nicola Samori art, and I'm like, holy fuck, no, this is...
It's perfect for the record.
Yeah, this...
Perfect.
This is, I mean...
Have you seen the way he paints, the process as
no,
well?
No,
It's incredible. So for anyone that doesn't know, he was a child prodigy. And he lived out, and he I think his parents converted his barn, like a barn that they owned, for him as an art studio. Oh. And he would just paint and paint and paint and paint. And he paints this very classical style, but then he attacks the paintings. So he'll paint on, like, some of them are painted on copper. So the God Equals Dog artwork, it's painted on sheets of copper, and then he strips the paint off, and he'll dig his fingers into it and pull the paint away from the surface that it's painted on, so that the work it becomes another thing altogether, because he's created this beautiful thing, and then he'll destroy it and make it even more beautiful.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, to me, it's very iconoclastic. It's spectacular. It's something I love it when, again, you know, you got this, you know, classic look. And then something very modern, you know what I mean? With a modern, very avant-garde-ish approach, or I don't know, it's classic and anarchic at the same time. You know what I mean? It's exactly how I approach my own music. It's like, on one, you know, we've been talking about that. Anyways, what I'm doing is like, okay, I got to be patient. So let's see what Dennis comes up with. You know, maybe it's going to be, there's going to be no competition. But at the same time, I'm feeling something, okay? So I'm making this plan B only in my head. And I remember we are on tour with Slayer, by the way. And we are sitting backstage and I'm getting two pieces from Dennis. And I'm seeing them and I'm showing them to Inferno. And he's like, oh, wow, wow, it's cool. It's cool. And I'm like, really? Is it? Yeah, yeah, it's cool. And then I just went Google, put the Nicola Samoriu painting, this one that we chose, without even contacting him, and I'm showing it to Inferno. It's like, this is our new cover. But this guy that just doesn't know about it yet, okay? But this this should be our cover, because that corresponds with me, okay? This is how I feel. This is our cover, you know? It just, you just know it. And then the next thing I do is like, I'm approaching Nicolas, and he's not aware of heavy metal. He doesn't know shit about it. He doesn't know anything about Behemoth. And I'm explaining him the whole vision and stuff and the situation we're facing. And he's just being super cool and generous and say, yeah, go ahead and use whatever you want.
Wow.
I'm like, you're serious? Yeah, absolutely, I'm serious. And but he was concerned, and that was, it's kind of funny about that too. It's like, well, what are you concerned about? Well, are you sure that my art is dark enough for your music? Because your music, you know, I mean, you sure that you, is it okay enough? Is it good enough? Is it dark enough? Man, this is perfect. This is exactly, if I was a painter that's how our music should be portrayed.
Yeah.
That's it, you know, bingo. And he was super cool, and I just can't thank him enough for being so generous and for being cool, because the situation was pretty, it was a shitty situation, you know. I mean, like, we had,
that's tough.
Yeah, it's tough. But at least, you know, I mean, I felt like, you know, okay, so, you know, I didn't just make up my mind. Dennis' work was okay. We might be using it at some point, somewhere, maybe merchandise, I don't know. It was cool, but it wasn't spectacular. It wasn't mind-blowing.
Yeah.
And that was something I was, that this album deserved, you know, the mind-blowing artwork. So I told Dennis what's the situation. Of course, you know, we keep the rights to that.
Yeah.
Maybe sometime in the future we're going to team up again to do something, but for this time, I thank him for that. But we went for Nicolas' work, and I couldn't be happier about the situation. So,
something I found interesting was, as I was saying before, I said to you, when I play stuff on my radio show, I have to, if there's something where the content is, I don't know how to say it, like strong content, shall we say, and they have to get referred, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're the only band that I've had to send stuff to. I didn't even know they had I can't remember the name of the department, but the BBC has like a somebody that is like a religious expert.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And you're one of the very, very, I think you're probably the only band actually that I know about that I've heard back from, where I've gone, I'm going to play this song, and then my producer's like, okay, well, I need to get everything checked through, and she'll send them to this person, and they always come back with like, these lyrics are brilliant. They're the most knowledgeable and in depth, which I think is which is high praise, I guess. But I find it funny that that I have to do that in the first place. But I mean, regardless, I think that's something I love about this record and the last record as well, and all of them. I like going through things, and I like finding reference points. And as I said about all the references to Crowley and your thoughts on religion, especially within Poland, I think really resonate throughout this record.
You guess so.
You guess.
No, I mean, of course, but
I think if anyone's brought up in a certain environment that feels in stifling, they're going to approach their art as a
yeah, but you know what?
As I a mean, kickback to that.
Yeah. It is in a way, but it's let's call it that way. You know, I Love You to the Darkest is the most biblical album because we've always been like inspired by the Bible in some way, more direct or not, but it's a very direct way, you know, considering the aesthetics, the album title, everything around it is very, there's a literal like connections here and there, and it's
well, yeah, the title and Romans 5:8.
It's very strong. The way I see that is that it's like I'm a huge Nick Cave fan, and
yes,
when I confront his music, like anything, he's also very much inspired by the Bible.
Yeah.
But can you say he's like preaching Catholic? No, yeah. He's quite an opposite, I'd say, you know. But I really like that, it's just very spiritual, and he's just using these elements, and that's exactly how I see our art, our music, that we're just using these elements that are kind of inbred our system.
Yeah.
No one has ever asked me about, hey, do you want to be baptized? No, I was just baptized. I was raised in that system. So it's here, you know, like I've never had like a serious problems with church, you know, like there was some serious issues. Never, you know, but it doesn't take away my right of just going against that doctrine because I just disagree with every cell in my organism is just saying no to that. So, and my artistic right is to go within my temple, be it an album or a venue that I perform or a clip or whatever, and scream out my whatever, anger or just whatever there is, you know, just spit it out, yeah, my way. And I think that this is the problem I'm facing in Poland. People don't understand the metaphors, you know.
Yeah.
People don't understand. I mean, I'm part of society, and I've always been explaining that, hey, I'm not attacking you people, you know. You may believe whatever you want, you know.
Mm.
And there's religious people in my environment as well, but we're not having fist fights, you know, whatsoever. No, we can respect each other because we can communicate with other human beings on many levels, you know. We don't need to go on that level, you know, just to, you know, to start a fight. Let's just leave it aside, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe we, I don't know, share some hobbies, or we can talk about whatever. Just intelligent people can communicate regardless, right?
Yeah. So I'd like to think so.
Yeah. So I'm not targeting you people. I'm targeting a doctrine that I disagree with. I'm targeting the dogma, and because I accuse this dogma of attempting, or no?
Literally. We don't live in a secular society.
No, exactly, and that is a problem, and I'm making some political comments lately, without being very much interested in politics and not having much knowledge. I'm making political comments. I don't know if they're right, but that's the way I feel that, you know. I mean, when I was a kid, I just my state of mind was somewhere else.
Hmm.
But nowadays, when Behemoth is a proper company, it's a company that is based in Poland. We're paying shitload of money taxes to this government, and this government, I mean, the church is paid off taxes. So I'm like thinking, I mean, there's a catch 22, there's a paradox, okay? I'm a traveling artist. I make money in US, in Russia, in UK. I make money, I bring the money back to Poland. You use my money because I'm paying a shitload of taxes. You're just supporting church and you're using my money. And then at the same time, every now and then I get you try to nail my ass, you know, just put me behind bars or whatever, punish me for who I am, for my artistry, and just calling me a public enemy, a national anti-hero, whatever, you know. So, so we're like, hey, be consequent. Don't take my money and try to put me in jail. Or take my money and protect me.
And leave me alone, yeah.
And leave me alone. Because I'm being, yeah. it's like a bipolar, it's very ambivalent approach, you know, that I'm like, what's wrong with you people? Fucking leave me alone. You must protect me because I'm leaving a lot of money here, you know. And I bet like any other country, and UK is like that, and Czech is like that, and fucking Sweden is like that. I bet that if I'd like to move out and come here and say, hey, this is my companies, this is how much money I make a year, this is how much money you're going to get every year, I bet that every like smart kind of will like, yeah, you're welcome. Come here, leave your money. And we protect you, you know, because that's all within the democratic rules.
Yeah.
And to me, it's just anti, exactly, it's not a secular society. It's still very much bound to its tradition. And this tradition is very, is deeply rooted in church and Catholic Church.
Mm.
So, but then again, the whole paradox is that if I wasn't born there, you know.
This is what I was about to say.
Yeah, I mean.
Would you be making the music you're making now?
I don't know. I guess not. Or it'd be different music, or maybe I'd be a way more peaceful person, or being into something completely different. And I said that like keyword dichotomy, right? That's exactly what made me as a person, as an artist, you know. That's why I always come back with this black and white, day and night, and saint and sinner comparisons. This very radical, this very extreme poles. Mm. Why I always try to...
Like this.
Yeah, exactly. Why? It's... First, I did a lot of things throughout the years. I just did them because they felt right, you know. But it looks... When I'm looking back, I'm like, that's why I did that.
Yeah.
Sometimes it takes me years to realize why I wrote a song like that, why I came up with the title. I realize things like 10 years later. I go to my records and I see them differently. And today, when I read lyrics from Evangelion or Saskia Kultus, I'm like, now I know what I meant.
Yeah.
Or now I know, or at least I sense what it's all about. You know, back then I was more... Yeah, it was all about like intuition and something, some inner strength that were just coming out that way. But
yeah, you could look at it in the sense that you're looking at something this close.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
Time,
exactly. Distance.
You pull back and you see a bigger picture.
It's interesting. But it's also very exciting. Don't get me wrong. You know, I'm not bashing my own country. It's cool country. It's as cool as another country.
Yeah.
It's no better and no worse. Yeah. It's just, you know, we're just going through this pretty difficult phase now, politically. And but the whole world is going through this.
Yep. In its own way. Yeah. For sure.
How do you feel about Brexit?
Let's not talk about it.
Okay.
I don't want to get into that.
Okay.
I think it's clear how I feel about it. I think we've spoken for a long time, actually.
But it's a good talk. I think I like the flow of it.
Yeah.
It's just, you know.
Yeah. I think we're good. Yeah.
That's what makes this, you know, kind of conversations exciting, you know, that it's so I don't know.
Free flowing.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's
good. Thank you.
Yeah, cool. It was fun.
Thanks for listening to that. That was Nurgle from Behemoth. You can find him on socials, like on Instagram it is Nurgle69. Behemoth's official one is, funnily enough, Behemoth Official. You can follow them, keep up to date with what's going on with him. I was very excited that it was recently announced that there's going to be another Me and That Man record as well. If you haven't checked that record out, that's wicked.
It's well worth having a listen to if you're into kind of dark alt Americana and country type stuff. And I mean dark. Artwork's wicked for the album as well. So yeah, so there's going to be another Me and That Man record, which is cool. You should also check out the Behemoth album, I Loved You at Your Darkest, because you probably have by now anyway, if you know what's what. But this is what we've been talking about for a lot of this, and it's an amazing piece of work. So follow him on socials. Keep up to date with what's going on with him musically, also his yoga practice and also his workouts, because he loves posting that, which is ace. And I think it just shows that the whole image of people that are involved in extreme metal, and especially like blackened metal, aren't all about just standing out in the grim and frostbitten wastes getting chillblains. It's also about having a nice barber experience and dressing nicely, which is ace. Funny how that all works out. Right, you can follow me online at Swim Podcast for the podcast and at Daniel P. Carter for me and all the other stuff. So the next episode of Swim is either going to be with Dennis Lixon of Refused or Nikki Six of Motley Crue. I've already recorded the episode with Dennis. I did it when I was out in LA recently and we hung out a bunch and we did a quick episode while we were there. It's a really good one, actually. Very cool. I was stoked. And I feel like, you know, we knew each other a fair bit anyway, but after that, it felt like we're buds, like we message and stuff now. And I feel like, I mean, that's pretty much the aim of the podcast for me, is to have interesting conversations with people that I admire and would like to know better. And it generally has worked out pretty well so far. So yeah, so next episode is either with Dennis or with Nikki Six from Motley Crue, because The Dirt is coming out, the film, which is coming out on Netflix, which is the adaptation of their book that they did with Neil Strauss. I may have seen that already, or I may not have done, because I may have signed an NDA, so may not be able to talk about it yet. So anyway, I'm recording an episode of Swim with him in a few days, and I don't know which one's going to come next. I will probably put on the Swim Podcast Instagram stories a voting type thing, and if you have any particular preference, you can let me know there, or just in, like, I don't know, just over the internet. I'm also thinking about how I can make these a little bit more regular, and I think the thing to do that seems to make sense for me at the moment is the fact that I get asked a lot of times about a lot of the books, the artists and ideas that get spoken about on the podcast with people. So I figured the best way of addressing that is, because I'm pretty terrible with the show notes, the best way of addressing that is to actually do extra episodes, so that there's going to be like a Swim Podcast book club. That's the idea anyway. I've got a few friends that I would like to be involved in it, and there's also a possibility that we do it so that I'll announce what books are going to be getting discussed a month in advance, and maybe a few of you might want to read along, and then we can all kind of have an online discussion about it that way. I think that would be kind of cool, because there's a lot of stuff gets covered in the podcast, and generally a lot of people want to know a bit more, which is ace, because I guess that means that things are going in the right direction and I'm doing something right, which is, you know, always nice. You can actually let me know if you leave a review on iTunes and a 5-star rating. Like, I know I say it at the end of every podcast, I'm not desperate for it, but it does make a big difference as far as exposure goes, because the better the rated podcast, the more it gets pushed to the front, and the more it gets pushed to the front, the more these kind of ideas get heard and these artists get heard, and I think that's a better thing for everyone. Just saying. Until next episode, I'm out. Peace.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.